Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue. The international break is over once again and the Premier League is back. Colin Buick from Off The Ball will be in to chat about this weekend's games. In particular, we'll look ahead to the big one, Liverpool versus Manchester United. We'll also chat about Jack Wilshere's move to Luton Town. He's their head coach now. League One side Luton Town are struggling, currently 11th. And one of the teams that are not struggling is Crystal Palace. They're one of the most informed teams in Europe at the moment. So it's time to have a fan on the show. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue.
Hello and welcome along to another episode of The Kickoff. Cathal Minogue here. And I've got the one and only Colin Buig with me as well. How are you?
Well, Colin, this isn't any our normal week, is it? I mean, this is the football kickoff. We have all the ingredients. But like, you know, what makes a special meal beyond the ingredients, you know?
The bread.
Something extra. A little club I like to call St. Kevin's.
Just Kevin's.
St. Kevin's. They've now been knighted.
Yeah, they should be.
Sainthood. I mind my own business. I'm on Instagram and I see the guy across from me here, Cathal Minogue, lift the trophy, insisted on taking the trophy after St. Kevin's won the big one, and he's not even the captain. It's just unbelievable. He didn't even play. Some achievement, boy. Fair play.
Yeah, no, let's clarify. I was the captain.
Absolutely the captain. Much. Fantastic. Central figure to it. He says to me, I'll see you Thursday.
Yep.
Straight away. So I saw Cathal during the week here. But you had a great celebration.
I did, yeah. My hurling team, Kevin's Hurling Club, based there in Dolphins Barn kind of area in Dublin City.
Yeah.
Inner South Dublin City. We won the Junior A Hurling Championship in Dublin on Sunday morning against Ballyboden. And fantastic win, yeah. Fantastic. We're intermediate now. We're intermediate anyway. The top two teams go up, which is good. So the pressure was off. We're into Leinster now, but we celebrated pretty hard.
Nice. When are you back training?
Sunday morning. We're actually, yeah, they gave us the week off. So we're back training Sunday morning. All eyes are on the Leinster Championship, which happens in 9th of November, I think it is. Yeah. But actually, you know, I planned my holidays because I was so confident and I was trying to manifest that we would get to the county final. So trying to convince my lovely Mrs. Clare at home that no, we're going to, can we wait till October to go on holidays? And what if we don't get to the final? No, but we will. Do you know you will? Well, look, let's just go with it. So thankfully we did. And on Sunday I'm flying off. So,
nice.
Yeah. So I think you might have to look after this ship next week.
Where are you off to?
After Tenerife. It's where all good county winners go.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's, you'll all be there. All of you. Yeah. Swapping stories.
But look, it was great, and it was it was special times. There was one man who went off to his very first hurling match. He's a soccer man, United fan. Mentioned him on this show a lot. Dave Moore from Today FM. He came along to support me, and it was his first ever hurling match, and he was blown away.
Was he?
Yeah, I was thinking, man, imagine if you went to an inter-county match in Thurles there. Imagine like. But he loved it.
What were his key takeaways?
I rang him because obviously he didn't get to really see him after the match. So I rang him. I got back into the car. First thing he says, "You boys aren't messing about, are you?" He's like, "Yeah, what do you think so?" It's physical.
Do you know what that lingo? He falls seamlessly into a GAA crowd.
Yeah,
you're not messing about there. That could mean anything.
Yeah.
There's so many possibilities to describe a hurling match when you say that.
Yeah, there is. I don't even know. It was a scrappy old game, so I'm not sure how much of it the free-flowing nature, he actually didn't get to see a whole lot of that at times. You know, this is winter hurling, it's October. So if he really enjoyed that. Now, it was on in O'Toole Park in near Crumlin, let's say, Crumlin-Kimmage area. And there's a huge crowd at it, and it was all, they're very much on top of the pitch, you know. So there's a lot of that and a lot of screaming and shouting. So I think, that he enjoyed all that bit of it. But I said there that I predicted that we would get to the final. You know, I hoped we'd get. We actually got an email in at kickoff@todayfm.com, right? Read this. Subject says, holding Colm accountable, which is an incredible start. Hey, Cathal and Colm, loving the show lately. I'm a Leeds fan. I really enjoyed your chat with Paul at the start of the year about the Whites. Great stuff. Paul Madden was the Leeds fan I chat with, the very first show we did. Mm-hmm. Can I make a small suggestion or pull you up on something, whichever sounds kinder? Suggestion sounds kinder. Tony is this man's name. Each week you ask Colm for his predictions, but you never hold him accountable for them. I think it's only fair we find out how many he actually gets right each week. Let's keep him honest.
Yeah.
Cheers, Tony. Tony, we will do that. That's because in the second half of the show we'll get his predictions for
wait, no, I think I've gotten a few right, Tony.
You see, that's it. You could say spot that on, but sure, man. We don't know. I know you got one time, was a one-all draw.
Yeah, that's the one. Do you know what that would have meant last season? We did a show on Off the Ball called Who You Got. I don't know if Tony's familiar with it, right? But we would play this game, right, where you predict five games that are happening that weekend.
Yeah.
You get 3 points if the scoreline was exact. You get a point if you predicted the right result.
Okay.
And everything else, of course.
Okay.
So we did 2 seasons of it. The first season, I won. The whole league, there was a bunch of us in it from Off the Ball. I finished 11 points clear of second place. Wow. The second year, finished rock bottom.
The beauty of prediction. What did you win? Did you win anything? Did you get it for that?
I got a little trophy. And when I say got, I found a little trophy in the office and I brought it
in. You claimed it.
And I put it on the microphone as we did the whole, on the microphone as we did the whole piece. And then thankfully, Cahill, a year later, I wasn't there in the final episode of that season, which was only a few months ago when I finished rock bottom at the table. And I mean rock bottom.
Rock bottom.
Yeah. That's wow. The beautiful swings and roundabouts of this world of predictions.
Yeah.
But Tony, all about that, yeah?
Let's okay. That, like. But we will do that. We'll keep account. I'll write them down. I'll remember. Before we get to this weekend's matches, because thank God it's back. It's back, and the stress of the international break is...
You're not a fan of the international break.
No, I'm not.
You never have been.
No, and I just prefer the Premier League, the games in the Premier League. I mean, a lot of the international games can be drab. Now, I actually did really enjoy the Ireland-Portugal game.
There was something about it.
Mode. Kelleher's save was incredible, and I was disgusted. Don't get me wrong, I was disgusted when we lost. But then the Armenia game comes, and then we win, and then it's just the negativity around it all. And I'm just like, do you know what now? It's a bit grim, and it's just the same stories keep on coming back up. And I was listening to ye boys down and Off the Ball yesterday morning, and you know, it's just the same chat. I get it, but we're already looking to see who's going to be the next manager. Will it be Damien Duff, even though this man is still in the job? Our boy, Hal Grimson.
Yeah.
I mean, look, can I ask you one thing?
Yeah,
are you happy? Are you happy that we won the other night?
Oh, sorry.
No. Let's not go there.
Oh, my God.
I just told you the weekend I had.
Are we happy that we won the other night? Of course I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're happy.
Why wouldn't I be?
I don't know. I felt like you're all a small bit negative.
No. I think you got to re-listen back to that, right? There was an element of positivity that I'm going from. I just want a bit more. The problem we have with Ireland, we won't get into this too long, is we just have no midfield, like, so we have to negate the midfield. Just play to our strengths, like. Pack this thing with defenders and forwards, and we have something. We have a game plan. We're much better than we're shown. Northern Ireland are a prime example. Look at the way Northern Ireland play ball. They don't have any player that's higher profile than us. Conor Bradley at Liverpool is a squad player at Liverpool. We'll play a bit more now that Trent Alexander-Arnold is gone. Queevan Keller was at Liverpool last season. Played his fair share and has done over the last couple of years. But if you look at the rest of the average Northern Ireland player versus the average Republic of Ireland player, very little difference. And so they play football with a bit of confidence, and we don't. And it wrecks my head watching a team with no confidence, because we could have something. I have a question back for you. You watched that Portugal game and you were heavily involved. You felt something that night.
Yeah.
That was about 12 hours before your final.
Yeah.
So the heartbreak of Ruben Neves' header to win the game for Portugal, what mood did that put you in going to bed on Saturday night ahead of your final?
I said, that won't happen to us. That ain't happening to us.
Because there's no headers allowed.
No. Surely we get a free out for that.
Come here. Did you sleep well before the final?
Like a baby.
Now, that is interesting about your psyche.
Mm.
What does that say?
I love sleep. Now, I didn't sleep much. I have no issue with that. Yeah, I have no issue with that. And it's actually interesting because our coach would have been all week talking about, you know, how you manage your emotions or whatever, you know. It's the same in football. It's the same in any sport you play, how you manage your emotions. And he said, do not worry if you have a terrible night's sleep on Saturday night. Don't worry about it. Don't let that freak you out at all. That's fine. Look after yourself all week, and one night's sleep, it won't be that bad. And Brendan is a great coach. I'm interested. I'm interested about something I did wake up to on Monday. Jack Wilshere.
Yeah.
He's now a manager. I kind of forgotten about Jack Wilshere. Is that a bad thing? I mean, his career was an interesting career at playing.
Yeah, it's a good word to describe it. Interesting. I remember when he came through Cahill in, I want to say 2010. He got into the first team at Arsenal. Oh, I loved him. I loved this guy. I loved watching this footballer. His command of the ball, his confidence. There's a game that Arsenal played against Barcelona at the Emirates in the Champions League. Might have been a group game, or it might have been like early knockout rounds. Tony and the likes out there will confirm that with us. But it was like prime Barcelona. Do you know, like all their best players from the era.
Yeah.
And let's just say he didn't stand out badly. It's not like he didn't belong. He was the opposite. He was like, this guy could play for Barcelona. I'm talking about the Barcelona. That's how good he was. And he was so young. So young at this stage, and he just had this confidence and belief about him.
What year are you talking?
But this is about 2010-11.
Yeah,
around,
okay.
Around that time. So for a few years, just an extraordinary player under Arsene Wenger. But that old chestnut injuries, and you hear it so often in so many sports. You hear a fella down the pub, Cahill, this weekend will tell you, oh, I had trials for West Ham with the knee, the ankle. And this is Jack Wilshere in real life. He didn't have trials for West Ham. He played for Arsenal and he excelled there, but injuries got the better of him over years. And he actually did end up playing for West Ham at one point when he eventually left Arsenal. He played for Bournemouth. He had a bit of a comeback there, and he could still see the quality that he possessed even towards the end of his career. Beautiful footballer. I always got the sense from him in the little bit of media he did when he was playing that he'd have other interests away from football and that you wouldn't see him again when he retired. But it's the exact opposite. This is a young man because he retired young.
Yeah.
And like you said, he's working away here and he's got a big job, Luton Town.
Yeah, Luton Town. They're currently 11th in League One.
Yeah, so they've had a real bad last couple of years because you'll remember it was only a few seasons ago that they were in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And they did really well. They went down, but I think they entertained a lot of people en route to getting relegated, but they've had consecutive relegations and so they're in a third tier of English football now. So if Wilshere gets them back up to the Championship, happy days. If he's any bit as good a manager as he was a player, we're on to something special here in terms of, well, from the English perspective, which we would care less about, but from the Premier League standpoint, who knows when we'll see him again. So I can't comment too much on what he's like as a manager. If you look at his previous experience, he had an interim spell in Norwich, I think, and he's involved with the Arsenal under-18s.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could be great with the next generation and all that, but who knows what he's like in senior management, different ballgame altogether. It's down in League One. It's very tough league to play, and that's Brian Barry Murphy's Cardiff City, relentless, playing twice a week, away from the spotlight. They're only a push notification type of team. Do you know what I mean? You'll have Luton Town and live score and you'll get their scores, but you won't see them an awful lot. So you'll be judging them on, how's he getting on here? How many points is he accumulating? Are Luton in the playoffs? Are they going to come up automatically? That's how it's tough down there. You're not seeing them an awful lot, unless you're a Luton fan. You know what I mean? Unless you're streaming all these games.
Yeah.
We're only going to be talking about Wilshere sporadically. So I admire him and the likes. I admire Frank Lampard going back down to the Championship, doing so well with Coventry. I admire these former high-profile players who really want to make it as managers and go down. I admired even Wayne Rooney. It didn't work out at Birmingham and Plymouth, but he tried. I admire it. It's tough. It's away from spotlight.
Your push notification team is one of the best analogies you've ever said.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always transfer, does it? It doesn't. If you're a good player, it doesn't always work out. Wayne Rooney is a prime example of that. What's the different traits, do you think, that someone needs to be a good manager?
I'd say empathy, first of all, and putting yourself in the position of the player. Because you're right, like a lot of really talented players, they just can't do it. In fact, it's the ones that do make that transition successfully. They're so noteworthy. Pep Guardiola, probably being arguably the greatest example ever, was a great player, even a better manager. Johan Cruyff, to go way back in the day, exceptional. But it's very difficult because look at the best managers in the game, right? Brian Clough, way back when, was actually a prolific striker, got injured, didn't fulfil his potential in his career, but was a goal-scoring striker. And needless to say, what he did as manager. Alex Ferguson, same story. Got his big move to Rangers as a player. didn't work out at all for him at Rangers. Couldn't step up to that level. And he did what he did as a manager. Arsene Wenger, Jose Mourinho, nothing of note. Rafa Benitez, okay. Sven-Göran Eriksson, okay. Now, people laugh at Sven, but like Sven did win the Scudetto with Lazio and had a phenomenal CV up until England. England afterwards, people are going to laugh at what happened with Sven. But he was a phenomenal manager. So it's so difficult to do both. If you're able to make that transition, it's putting yourself in the position of lesser players, understanding their limitations and their potential. If you can do that, if you can bring yourself down to that level, it sounds patronising, but it is objectively true. Roy Keane could never really manage it. He did all right for Sunderland for a while. He got them up from the Championship. He kept them in the Premier League the first season. The next season afterwards went bad. Ipswich didn't work out. We've never seen him manage again. It's tough. It's Steven Gerrard. He did okay. He did well at Rangers. He struggled otherwise. Frank Lampard is doing well at Coventry. Struggled to translate that message. How can you do it, Cahill? If you're brilliant at the game, if you're unbelievable and you can do all these natural things, how the hell can you train that? You really need...
Because you expect it. You expect that they can do... Why can't you do what I do?
Yeah. Why can't you do this? Like, why... I don't understand this. I mean, like, this, like, how can you not do... How can you not curl into the top corner with your bad foot?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. But so few are able to make that transition. I think you have to have empathy with the individual and understanding of their limitations if you're talking about a great player turned manager, and an obsession with the game of football and how it's played tactically and the evolution of that and the ability to adapt to modern trends and, in the case of Pep, create modern trends. But that's a huge remit, Cahill. That's massive. So sometimes it helps you if you are a limited player.
Yeah. Well, Arne Slot, I think, was kind of a limited player.
Jurgen Klopp was limited.
Yeah. Speaking of Arne Slot, lost the last three games.
I know.
Liverpool. Interesting weekend ahead. You'll be back, will you? And we'll have a chat about one of your favourite fixtures.
I can come back, I suppose. Yeah.
I can. Would you mind?
All right. Go on.
On the way, one of Ireland's biggest Crystal Palace fans, and he has quite the beautiful story about his first Crystal Palace game. He's on the way.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
One of the teams of the season so far has been Crystal Palace. They were 19 games unbeaten in all competitions until Everton beat them 2-1 just before the international break. But things have been very, very impressive from Palace. So I thought it might be a good idea to chat to a fan, Andy McCormack. He's a Selbridge man. He's from the Irish Crystal Palace Supporters Club and he's on the line now. How are you, Andy?
Hey, Carl. How's things?
Oh, good. I'd say things are good with you supporting Crystal Palace at the moment. Times are pretty good.
Yeah, definitely can't complain. It's been a brilliant start to the season and great end to last season as well.
Yeah, did you ever think when you were first supporting Crystal Palace that this is where things would be? I mean, you must have some confidence in the team. It must be pretty special times.
Yeah, look, it's brilliant. It's unprecedented times, really, as a Palace fan. End of the season was brilliant last year, obviously winning our first trophy, the FA Cup, and into Europe now this year. So, yeah, no, it's been brilliant. I was only talking to someone the other day about all the years I've been supporting Palace. They've probably been in the Championship more than they've been in the Premier League. So to be flying high in the Premier League at the minute and obviously finished last year, brilliant. Great manager and a great squad. So, yeah, everything's going great. Can't complain.
When did you first start supporting Crystal Palace?
So I would have started supporting probably around when I was 8 or 9, when I started playing football. My dad was a Palace fan. So him and my mum were from Lucan originally in Dublin. And they both lived in England for a number of years. And he actually lived right beside the ground. So obviously when I was younger then, because he supported them, I supported them. And when I first started supporting them, they were probably in the first division, the old first division, which would have been the Premier League at the time.
Yeah.
So I thought I was on to a winner then. But obviously things changed pretty quick and they probably spent more time in the Championship after that. But my dad used to always say it's easier to support the big teams or United and Liverpool and stuff, but the special moments with a team like Palace are extra special because they don't come around that often. So so probably since about 8.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, since the start of this show we've been kind of chatting with fans of, I suppose, not one of the big six in better terms, because it's not as usual to see a Crystal Palace fan or a Brentford fan or a Brighton fan, you know, but it seems to be the case that either one of their parents got them into it or maybe an uncle brought them to a game. They might have been living in around that area. It's always that, isn't it? It's like it's either a parent or a relation or something like that.
Yeah, I know a few of the guys that we know over here would be like that, like an uncle bought them a jersey or possibly brought them to a game. And then there'll be a good few guys and ladies living over here from England who will be Palace fans, and obviously they're still supporting them. And then there's a couple of guys that we know that live in England who are from Ireland originally, and like that, they would live beside Selhurst Park or close to it, and they get to go all the games and stuff. So, and you'd be surprised actually the amount of fans that are around. I suppose if you're in Dublin Airport on any Saturday, you'd see all the different jerseys and obviously loads of Palace jerseys, but other teams as well that you wouldn't probably think. We used to see kind of QPR fans and stuff like that as well, which seems quite random, but I suppose when you're in Dublin Airport, you'd see them all going through on a Saturday going to the games.
Yeah, there's a man in Cashel, and where I'm from in Tipperary, and he's a Coventry fan. I'll never forget that he's a Coventry fan. You know, once you know, it's like that's a random team to be supporting, but he's a big Coventry fan. How many games would you be heading over to now a season? Would you try and get over to a few of them?
Probably try and get over 3 or 4 times a year. Years ago, when I was a bit younger, we'd have got over probably more. And a couple of friends that I know from RD there, big Palace fans, they go over probably 8 or 9, maybe 10 times a year. And then we've a few guys in the supporters club that are season ticket holders, and there's one or two guys that go over to every home game. There's a lad in Kilkenny, Pat Doyle, goes to every single home game, and another couple of guys in Dublin do the same. So I get over probably 3 or 4 times a year. I think we've been over 3 times this year so far, and we're going to the next game is probably the European game against AZ Alkmaar in a couple of weeks. I think start November.
You must have been delighted when you saw that Shelburne were going to be playing him on the 11th of December. Were you able to get tickets for that one?
We have tickets, but they're probably not in the end we wanted. So I'm not sure if I can say that.
Oh yeah,
there's probably a lot of.
Yeah, of course. you have to go in incognito. So do you, or do you have to wear the Shells jersey?
Yeah, well, look. It'll be mid-December, so we're all wearing coats anyway. But I'm possibly aware of a lot of fans who may have tickets in not the right end. But look, Shell get their few quid out, but they'll be happy.
Okay, I get you. The less said about that, the better. You don't want to be giving away your identity. Yeah. That is interesting.
We're holding a big event in a pub in Talla. They're going to have like a Palace fan zone for us. So obviously we haven't agreed it completely yet, so I won't name the place yet, but we're planning on having a big event pre-game, and we're hoping to get an ex-Palace Irish player up to do like a podcast with them, an interview and stuff with them before the game. So
brilliant.
That's what we're trying to plan to do. So just to kind of make it a bit of an occasion. The fact that they're playing in Ireland is great. Like the last time Palace were here was probably 2013 when they played Waterford in a friendly.
Really? Okay.
Down in Waterford. So yeah, so it's great that they're, and I'm probably 20 minutes from Talla Stadium, so it's brilliant.
That couldn't have landed any better for you. So really, talk to me about that FA Cup final against Manchester City. 1-0 historic win in Wembley. Were you there?
Yeah, so I was over there with my family. So I was there with my wife and with 3 boys as well, so they're all Palace fans. And I suppose the last few years I've been trying to get them to be Palace fans, so it's been a little bit easier because they're doing well. Because obviously most of their friends will be City, United, Liverpool fans. But we actually went to the semi-final against Villa, because I didn't think we'd get to the final. Villa were in great form, we weren't. And I said, look, it's a great chance to get to Wembley, to go and visit Wembley. I was in the old Wembley years and years ago, and I've been to New Wembley a couple of times just for playoff finals and stuff. So we went for the semi-final, and then obviously we won. Mm. And I remember saying to my wife on the way home, like, we're going to have to go back for the final. We can't not go to the final. Yeah. So we went over. We actually drove over just with the flights and stuff because it was 5 of us and we weren't sure where we were going to get tickets. We had to book it quite late. So we ended up getting the boat to Holyhead, driving down to London, going to the cup final then. And then obviously the same driving boat back. But listen, it was brilliant. It was an amazing experience. And even better to share it with the family. Like, it was great. And obviously the friends and stuff that we have over there, we've been going to games for years. So it was a special, special day, especially against the likes of City. You're not expecting to win it. And I think the way the game went, City like dominate for such long periods, you're just waiting for them to score. But, and maybe if we played the game 10 times, they might win at 9. But just that day just happened to be ours. So it was great, brilliant, great experience. I was actually at the cup final in 2016 when we lost to Man United. And we led that game for a few minutes as well. I think we scored about 15 minutes to go. So for 5 or 6 minutes, I thought we were going to win the cup then. But
yeah.
But listen, 9 years later, we had our moment, so it was brilliant.
You were there for the heartbreak, but Well, you were there for the one of the greatest days of the club. It was the first ever major trophy won by the club in 91. I read in Wikipedia they won the full Members' Cup. But I mean, if you exclude any defunct competitions, it's the first ever major trophy. 1-0 Etze scored, and penalty saved by Dean Henderson in the game as well.
Yeah, I remember we were at the Palace fans were all behind that goal actually, and I remember he saved it, and the joy and emotion of everyone was coming up. But obviously the rebound came back out to Haaland, and I think he tried to pull it across, and Henderson got at it again. But when he smothered the ball a second time, you could see like the 40,000 Palace fans going bananas. Now it was still early in the game, obviously. But as the game went on, then every clearance, every tackle, every time they hit the ball wide or anything like that, it was cheered like a goal, like a winner. I know a guy that was with us at the final, actually, he was at the final in 91 and 2016.
Go away.
I was at the 2016 one against Man United. I think we lost an extra time, 2-1. But yeah, to be so close then, and then obviously to go and win it this year was just phenomenal.
Is that your favourite memory as a Crystal Palace fan, the final last year?
Yeah, it's definitely one of them. I probably have two favourite memories. Obviously, that one, I think that's going to be every Palace fan's favourite memory. But I suppose my favourite one before that would have been my first ever Palace game. I think it was possibly 95, 96. We played Leicester City in a playoff final. It was at the old Wembley. That was my first ever game. And my father brought me over to it. But he got the trip for me as a surprise. But it turned out, before mobile phones and all that kind of stuff, you had a house phone. We had a house phone downstairs and a house phone upstairs. But if you were on the house phone downstairs and I picked up the phone upstairs, I could hear the conversation, but you wouldn't know I was on the phone. So I actually overheard him booking flights, and I knew by the dates and stuff he's booking, and it was obviously for two people, and he had to give the names and stuff. Now, this is before the internet and your apps to go on and book Ryanair flights. You have to ring up and book them. So I remember I heard him, and I still feel the excitement now of hearing him booking the flights and stuff. And I never told him. He surprised me, obviously, then with the tickets and stuff, but I never told him that I knew, even up until he passed away in 21.
No way.
But going to that game was amazing. I remember getting the underground out to Wembley, the old Wembley it was then. We actually met Steve Coppell outside, who was a Palace manager at the time, just randomly. He was just going in as we were walking by. I was there with my uncle, so myself, my father, Seamus, my uncle, Tim, who had queued for hours to get the tickets. Again, you couldn't just buy them online. You had to go and queue. It was a 1-1 draw at the time, up until like the 93rd or 4th minute. Martin O'Neill was managing Leicester at the time.
Right.
And he brought a sub-goalkeeper on. It's a big 6'4", 6'5", fella. And last kick of the game, Leicester got a free kick, kicked into the box, headed clear, and Steve Claridge shinned it in from about 20 yards out. And I'll never forget the noise of 40,000 Leicester fans through the end of the ground, all going bananas, and we were all just sitting in silence. So, not a great end to the day.
Yeah.
But it was more the experience of going to Wembley. I mean, Wembley's, the old Wembley as well, was a phenomenal stadium. I think it was about 14 at the time, just, and the first ever game. So, but I think getting beaten set me up for life as a Palace fan to get used to those highs and lows in 90 minutes.
There's something beautiful about the fact that one of your favourite memories even is a day that you lost, you know. It just shows that sometimes, but it does show that sometimes it's more than just the result, you know, for these experiences and these games that you're going over to, you know, some of the time it's just to be a part of something else, and that's the whole reason you support a club. Even if they win or lose, you know, you'd be cursing them when they do lose, but there's something about that collective experience as a fan heading over to these games, and you know, obviously it's still very vivid in your memory, even though you lost.
Yeah, I think it's that, especially when you're younger, like, and as because it was my first game, so it's my first Palace game. It's obviously in somewhere like Wembley. It's you can still feel that kind of excitement, and I get it sometimes going to games now. Certain, like when we went to the cup final that time, we met up with all our friends in a pub in London. And it's just that buzz and the excitement and that kind of togetherness with all the other fans as you go to the game. But it's talking before the game, it's talking after the game, and as you, like, I'm sure you know yourself, everyone's an expert in the pub afterwards. Should have done this, should have done that. But it's the whole experience around it. And look, obviously, then when the good times come, when the big wins come, then it's special as well. Especially when you support a club like Palace, where they don't come around too often.
What would be the hope for the league position? Where would you be happy with?
I think top half of the table, realistically. Like we there is a running joke that Palace always finished 12th. And probably from being a Palace fan all these years, I'm a pessimist by nature. So I'd always think once we hit 40 points, I'd be happy. But I think we need to move past that now. I think top half, if we finish in the top 10, I'd be happy with that. It's going to be difficult, obviously, because they've got your league, you've got the Conference League now as well, which brings extra games to players who are playing Thursday, Sunday, which obviously will test your squad and how strong your squad is. And I think we have, like, in certain positions we're very strong, but one or two positions I'd worry about if we're to lose, like, the likes of Mateta or Munoz. We don't have a lot of kind of replacements for them in those positions. So, yeah, I think top 10 I'd be delighted with. Go far in the Conference League. Obviously, retain the FA Cup wouldn't be... I wouldn't mind that, but we'll see what happens.
Well, look, it's exciting. As you said, there's lots of hope, which is fantastic, isn't it? That's all you want as a fan, is hope. If anyone wants to know more about the Irish Crystal Palace Supporters Club, what should they do?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook, just Irish Crystal Palace Supporters Club, and then on Instagram and Twitter, or X as it's called now, it's Irish CPSC. And then we have pinned messages there with forms on how to join the supporters club and stuff like that, and we'll be organising trips over, we're organising meets. Our next meetup is actually for the Arsenal game on the 26th in Dublin. And we'll be looking to organise some trips, a couple of competitions as well, and probably a couple of regional meetups as well.
Where do you meet up in Dublin? Would it be kind of just, do you have a particular spot you go to, or would it be different every time?
It can change, but normally now it would be the Woolshed and Parnell Street.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a couple of supporters clubs head there for their meetups, it seems.
Yeah, I think they've a great selection of games and stuff on, so that's where our next meet is on the 26th. We're going there for the Arsenal game. So, and then we have a lot of fans kind of spread out throughout Ireland. So I know a good few years ago we went to Carrick and Shannon for a meetup. So the plan this year is to try and meet in a couple of different locations, because it obviously helps with people living in different, if you're living in Galway or up further north or down in Cork and stuff like that. So
I'm sure there's lots of Crystal Palace fans around as well, you know, and there's even more starting to come out of the woodwork now that things are going well. I'd imagine that's always the case.
Yeah, look, I think you'd be surprised with the amount. I think we've over 100 members that are registered with the supporters club for the 25-26 season, and I know a lot of guys that do their own thing as well that are Irish Palace fans that probably wouldn't be in it. But yeah, I think if you go to the airport any Saturday, you see a lot of fans from all different clubs, but there's plenty of Palace fans. I have three boys at the minute, so I have jerseys on them now. So there's another three to add to the list. And I know I have friends as well who have kids as well who have done the same. But my father used to be slagged about it was child cruelty to put a Palace jersey on a child, but that was back in the old days. But nowadays, it's not seen like that.
Yeah, it's much easier now, I think. It definitely wasn't as hard of a task, I'd imagine, to convince them to support Palace.
No, definitely not. No, not when they're going to Wembley and winning and then coming home telling all their friends in school.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're doing a lot better than the friends who support Manchester United or so. Andy McCormack from the Irish Crystal Palace Supporters Club. All I can say is dare to dream, Andy. Thanks a million.
No problem, Carl. Thanks very much for your time.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back to the Kickoff. And welcome back to Mr. Off the Ball, Colm Buig. Colm, when I mention Liverpool United to you in Anfield, I don't know, your face, it lights up a bit.
It does. I had a boyish smile there. I didn't see myself smiling, but I can imagine it was his
boy. You don't smile much. I know. Nah, you don't.
No.
Your humour is more kind of dry.
No, that's not true. I'm the smiliest person I know.
You don't know many people.
I'm the smiliest person. No, that's not true.
When it's smiliest people are off the ball. I don't know what that's saying. That made you laugh.
A lot of reviews have been like, I wish you took life more seriously. So that is an interesting bit of feedback. Yeah, I don't know what to do with that now.
No, I'm giving you loads of feedback on this show between myself and Tony, who emailed you earlier, because I look forward to getting your prediction for this game. What is your feeling on this game? Liverpool United, 4:30 on Sunday in Anfield.
This is a tough one to predict because Liverpool... unprecedented territory under Arne Slot, like you said. Three defeats in a row, never happened in his season and a quarter or so in charge. And then United, well, they won last time out, Cat, didn't they? Against Sunderland, and it was kind of comfortable. But then the weekend before, it was all over for Ruben Amorim after the 3-1 hammering, and it was a hammering, at Brentford. Mm. Well, how the hell did you predict this one? Let's help ourselves a bit, right? The last time this game was played was January 5th. Do you know what score it was? Because I had forgotten. I had to look this up and research. Do research. Liverpool 2. Manchester United 2.
Okay.
Lisandro Martinez gave United the lead in the second half. It was scoreless at half time. United played really well throughout this game. Rasmus Højlund, remember him? He's gone now to Napoli.
Yeah.
He was 1-on-1 with Alisson in the first half. Alisson saved it. But Lisandro Martinez, and wouldn't United love to have him back? He's just permacracked. He's out all the time, injured. Centre half, fired it into the roof of the net to go 1-0 up. Liverpool equalised, then took the lead through a Mo Salah penalty. But United levelled again. Amad Diallo. Right? Do you know what happened in this game, right? We're dead into injury time. Virgil van Dijk had a header. Point blank range, put it straight at Andre Onana. Andre Onana, he's in Turkey now. He's gone. 2-2. Looked like it was game over. United have a chance to win it. Joshua Zirkzee is put through on the right-hand side of the penalty area. He has two options, Cahill. I'll shoot on Alisson or I'll square it to my buddy Harry Maguire. He chooses the latter. It bobbles up in front of Harry's foot and he fires it over the bar. And Gary Neville is exasperated on commentary. He goes, oh!
I remember this.
He puts it over.
I remember
But it finished Desmond. Desmond Tutu. That was last season. This season, I'll go Liverpool 2, Manchester United 0.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is Liverpool back to winning ways. I think this is a return to the existential crisis that Manchester United have briefly gone on hiatus from in this game.
You're confident that Liverpool can turn it around after that bit of a bad run that they've had?
I am.
Because they're back home. Desmond Tutu is amazing, by the way.
Why did you ask me that like we're in a tribunal?
I'm just trying to get this thing back on the straight and narrow.
Me, Mr. Boo, that you're confident. I am, yeah.
Because, no, like, if we're going to keep you accountable for your predictions.
Yeah. Where are you going to log this?
I'm going to set up a Google Sheets or something.
Are you?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to get someone hire
someone. I don't think you're going to do this.
No, I will. But if you're getting them all right, we'll stop it.
It's up to Tony. It's up to Tony, I'd say.
It's only if you're getting them wrong.
Tony the Tiger Man, he's going to keep track of all this.
It's only if you're getting them wrong, we'll start mentioning them.
So Liverpool...
The bad run of form. Did you think it was a good time for them to get the international break?
Who, Liverpool?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think they wanted to rectify that. Like, so it's 3 defeats in a row, but it's only 2 in the Premier League. So it was 1 in the Champions League, away to Galatasaray.
Yeah.
But they are a much better side than United. Like, let's get that straight. But form does play a part of it. Now, the whole question of, you know, there's always that thing about the derbies. Form goes out the window. It's kind of, I don't know if it really applies to this, right? But 2-2 at Anfield was a surprising result in January. You know?
Yeah.
But then you look at, like, Liverpool's record in this fixture is really, really strong for them. They've only lost 1 of their last 14 Premier League games against Manchester United. So that equates to 7 wins for Liverpool. But this game has been drawn 6 times.
Okay.
In that spell.
Yeah.
So there's like a famous one back in, I want to say 2017. Tony, do I have that right out there? Let me know. It was billed as Red Monday. Red Monday, right? Sky Sports. It was one of the worst games I've ever watched in my life. Not just me, anyone. Everyone watched the same game. It was horrendous. The build up that this game got, it felt like it went on for about 3 months, which is a standard league game in like October. It was at the same time of the year.
Yeah.
And it was Jurgen Klopp against Jose Mourinho, Liverpool against Manchester United. Finished scoreless. It was appalling. That was Red Monday. And there actually have been a few drab draws at Anfield between these two sides. I love this game. I haven't even answered your question. Yeah, this is my favourite Premier League fixture ever.
Why?
Anfield, Liverpool, Manchester United, there's a bit of spice to it.
The colour of it and all.
Yeah, the colour of it. There's like, the animosity feels authentic. In an era where that's kind of a bit sanitised, you know?
Yeah.
The cut and thrust of midfield tackles and a bit of bite. You know, what you saw there when Kevin's beat Ballyboden last weekend, that's kind of gone, like, as in, there's a lot of love between players. You see it in the tunnel beforehand, half-time even walking off together, they're negotiating, swapping jerseys. After the game, they're hugging and kissing. That's just the players. So it's a different story these days.
Yeah, it is.
But with Liverpool United, even with the players who maybe don't have a big history or affiliation with either club, they get involved here. And that's why it's my favourite game, because I think if you're relying on sheer like visceral atmosphere in Premier League games, you're going to struggle. Like, you're going to be left disappointed a lot of the time, you know? I think this is kind of stands out that way. It's one of the few games, Colin, that I'm not tuning in to with the expectation or hope of a quality game of football where like the skill levels are high.
You want
it's just pure tense. Like tension. Yeah.
Okay. 4:30 on Sunday. Liverpool 2, Manchester United 0.
Yeah.
Is Colin's prediction. Liverpool will be also interested on Saturday at 5:30 because Fulham take on Arsenal. Arsenal are away. And our Brentford are on Monday Night Football live on Sky Sports. They're away to West Ham. The Premier League is back. I won't be back next week because I'm on my holidays. So look, I don't think the papers are fully signed because this is just transfer deadline day stuff, but hopefully Colm will be here next week. You look a bit worried. Maybe you haven't been told. But
I don't think this is going to work. Personally.
Look, I won't be here anyway. That's all I know. Colm might be here. We'll see. Hopefully there'll be a show next week.
All the best, man. Enjoy Tenerife.
Look a look.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.